Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very senior marketer from Pakistan, currently in Dubai, Falak Jaleel. Falak, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ashutosh. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Falak is a marketing guru. She's worked for very large companies like Unilever, Reckitt, and Nestle. She's very passionate about consumer insights, and she has been recognized and awarded several times. So, Falak, let's talk about branding, marketing, and FMCG.
Yeah.
With so much experience with iconic FMCG brands, what goes into building a successful brand?
Thank you. Firstly, I don't know how much of a marketing guru I am. I just try to do what I can. But I think in terms of building a successful brand, I think it starts with clarity, in my opinion. Clarity in what you want to achieve as a brand. What is the purpose you serve as a brand, you know, to your consumers? And then clarity on who your audience is, the whole 4 W's game. So who is your audience? Where can you reach them? What is your message to them? And why should they buy you? And that kind of leads to the last point, which is clarity in how are you distinctive? What is the value that you provide that no other brand can provide? So I think it kind of works, you know, top down, where you start with the purpose and then you come down to, you know, the actual product and emotional, you know, differential.
Very interesting. So, you know, you worked for such large brands. I've often said brands are living beings. You know, you've got to keep on giving a lot of inputs to them. And yet a lot of brands die very quickly. So my question to you is, what should be done for brands to stay relevant for a long time?
That's such an insightful thing to say, by the way. Not many people think of brands in that way. And you're right, brands live because of their consumers. As a brand manager, I'm merely a custodian. The real owners are really the people who consume them every day. And I'll give you an example. You know the brand Maggi. It's very big in India, especially Maggi noodles. Now, it's a brand with global relevance. In the Middle East, it's referred to as Maggi. Because there's no G in the Arabic alphabet.
Correct.
Now, in advertising, we say Maggi. Because that's how the consumers know it, right?
Right.
And the consumers own it accordingly. But to answer your question, brands need to evolve with their consumers also. So while the core insights of your brand, they might not change from a product functionality point of view, they will change from an emotional benefit point of view. And an example I'd like to give here is Nike's new communication platform on women empowerment. So Nike never talked about that before, but because women empowerment has become such a big topic, it's such a, you know, thing that we talk about, that they've actually created an emotional communication platform on it.
Wonderful. And, you know, when you look at, again, the iconic brands of Lever, Nestle, Reckitt, what are they doing differently for their brands that, you know, their brands just keep on living for decades and still are, you know, still appeal to every next generation?
So I think it comes back to the insights that, A, the consumer insights that we get. And I think this is why I'm so passionate about consumer insights, because it really gives you a window into your consumer. You understand why your consumer is buying you, and then you continue to do everything that is good about that, you know? And also you look at consumers' ambitions and their aspirations. And that is how you frame the brand as well.
Wonderful. Very interesting. And Falak, now if you look at, you know, the transformation that is taking place in our communications, when I was growing up in marketing and advertising, it was sitting with the agency with large sheets of paper. But this is the digital world. How are brands adapting and adjusting to a very fast moving digital world and to social media?
So I think it's important to understand first how the digital world is different from the TV and outdoor and print advertising generation. Correct. That's where I grew up. My first introduction was there. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing to consider is that the digital world is very, very fragmented. There's so many different social platforms. So there's Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. I mean, it could go on, right? Then there's streaming. So many different platforms there. And then you have e-commerce as well. So the list really goes on. So the fragmentation is something that you have to take into consideration. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that it moves at the speed of light.
Correct.
So I think one of the examples I remember that we used to give right in the beginning when we had started on our digital journey was that when Whitney Houston passed away, it hit news channels, I think, in the matter of 8 or 10 hours. And on Twitter, it went viral like within the matter of less than an hour. In 56 seconds, it had reached like some 50 million people. So that's how fast it works, right?
Mm.
And then, there are these trends that go viral within a day, and then they die down just as fast also.
Correct.
And I think 2020 is one of the key years that we will all remember. Mm. It's iconic in that sense, because you remember the obsession with Dalgona, the various memes on Donald Trump, on Bernie Sanders sitting, you know, with his muffs. So there's that. Then there's a third thing, which is audiences are becoming much more prolific, multi-device users.
Right.
So they're capable of imbibing several messages simultaneously. Mm. So that's also another consideration.
Mm.
And I think the last and most important one is that messages are no longer a one-way medium. Consumers want to interact with brands and get answers immediately.
Mm.
And I think just last week was an example. We wanted to go out somewhere to eat. And, you know, in this day and age, you don't know whether an F&B establishment has shut down or not. Mm-hmm. So Google was giving us an answer that, oh, it's open from 9 to 10 or whatever. And my brother said, just message them on Instagram. They'll respond immediately.
Mm.
I think for us as brands, the biggest challenge is to really break through the clutter.
Mm.
And also communicate with audiences in a relevant manner.
Okay.
And the message should cater to the channel of media that we are using.
Mm.
For example, you cannot create a 30-second TVC anymore and expect to run it across all platforms. Mm. That can't happen anymore. You know, you have to have a channel-specific media that you are producing.
Very interesting.
Imagine that you have a live stream of a football match, only to be interrupted by an advertisement on foot cream or laundry detergent.
Mm.
You'll only serve to alienate your consumer, you know? So it has to be very relevant to the platform that you are communicating on. And then the message, the length and even the format, you know? A lot of ads that we now consume are only for mobiles because we know that, you know, consumers are on their mobiles when they are, viewing on a certain platform.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. So, you know, you also mentioned that you're very passionate about consumer insights, which also means that you are looking at a lot of analytics for your brands.
Yes.
So my question is, how have you seen a change in the use of analytics for branding?
Oh, I think there is just a lot more data that we have. So there is a challenge there where you kind of go into analysis paralysis, as we used to call it.
Yeah.
You know, you just spend so much time on focusing on the data, you forget what the end goal is, right? So there's that. And then also, I think the other challenge is that, I mean, what is relevant to your audience and what is relevant for your brand?
Mm.
You have to kind of, take the chaff out from the wheat, you know?
Correct. Well said. And how important is doing continuous research, consumer research, for your brand?
So whenever I look at any kind of data, there are always four metrics that I look to evaluate my brand performance. So there's always your internal sales data, you know, that you get from your sales team. Then you have your external sales data that you get. Nielsen compiles it. It's called the retail audit. Another thing that I'm a big, big fan of is household panel. Household panel is basically data that you get from consumers on what they have consumed in a particular month. And then you have your brand health trackers. Now, all four of these metrics, they have to be on a continuous basis because that's only when you know. Like, you know, for example, retail audit tells you your market share. Now, how do you, you know, you need to know your market share on a continuous basis. Similarly, your household panel, how your consumer is consuming your product, that also you want to know on a continuous basis, whether your their consumption has gone up or down. For example, in COVID, consumers were buying a lot more, right? Because of just being afraid that it'll run out of stock. So, you know, you saw like all these pictures of toilet paper, you know, being out of stock in stores and a lot of canned foods, breakfast cereal. So it was being consumed a lot, but we didn't see that increase to that proportion in household panel. So really consumers are stocking up. So it's important to see all of these metrics, and it's important to see them on a continuous basis, because that's when you see, whenever you see an anomaly in the data, when you see a blip, that's when you know that what's going on. That's when you need to evaluate further whether there's an opportunity or there's a challenge for you.
Very interesting. So there is another very interesting dimension that a lot of marketers are now looking at, which is in the life post the pandemic. You know, work from home has become almost like a reality. So based on what is happening in the world post the pandemic, what is your view on how do marketers or brand owners change their strategy? Because now everything is coming through large e-commerce platforms.
So I think, I mean, the pandemic has shown us a very different view of, you know, what the world can look like. And I think especially from an e-commerce point of view, like you said, for example, I think, you know, even if I just look at e-commerce in isolation, Amazon sales have doubled from 178 billion to almost, I think, 387 billion in 2020 over 3 years. Yeah. So that's the power of your e-commerce as it is, you know. And meanwhile, you have your department stores like JCPenney and Brooks Brothers and Debenhams who filed for bankruptcy. So you know that the brick and mortar, that's kind of losing a lot of relevance, yeah? But I think just to answer your question, how has, so COVID has really, I think, accelerated all of these impacts. You know, I know for a fact that I don't buy detergent, tissue, and, you know, the big, bottles of you know, the floor cleaners in the store, because I know it's easier to just have it sent home
and possibly, you know, cheaper.
That convenience, right? But I think as a business, or even as a company, as a brand, I don't think it impacts me negatively in that way, because the sales just moves from your brick and mortar to your e-commerce. Now, it does change the way I do business now. It means that I need to focus a lot more. So I take out a lot of my trade spends that I've been spending in, you know, the big customers, and I now have to focus on the platforms. And I have to focus a lot, like I said, you know, it's the digital world moves at the speed of light. So for me, a sale lost in that hour, in that day, is lost then. So I have to move a lot faster in terms of the kind of marketing I do, the kind of promotions I run on digital.
Very interesting. And one more question for you is, you know, traditionally what used to happen for most brands was a lot of marketing activity would be happening at the store.
Yes.
So there'd be POP, there'd be danglers, there'd be, you know, leaflets and whatever else that used to happen. With e-commerce platforms, all that is beginning to change.
Yeah.
How are brand owners changing their strategy for communicating with the consumer?
So, like I said, like, you know, the promotions have now moved from being in store, like, well, not all of it. I mean, we still have a good chunk of our trade promotions in store, because in the Middle East, especially, you know, going for grocery is kind of like a family trip, you know. Okay. But just to, I mean, answer your question, it's changed because we need to be quicker. We need to have options for the consumer. And I think we need to leverage ourselves on the platforms better.
Okay.
And there's something that we did. Basically, when we did e-commerce in Nestle, there are three things that we did. So first was we ensured that we had visibility.
Mm-hmm.
So our product was not the same, you know, the product that you see in store.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have, you have to adapt your product and your packaging for e-commerce as well. And what do I mean by adapting the packaging? I mean that you clean the product, because when a consumer is on an e-commerce platform, he is seeing 1,000 products at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So your product needs to be distinctive in that way, right? Then, of course, you need to have a product that is more conducive to that consumer in terms of size, format, etc. And then lastly, you need to have the right promotions as well.
Interesting. Very interesting. So, you know, one more question related to brands, and then I'll move to a few questions for you personally. This is the age of the millennials and the Gen Zs. What is your view on how are the young people changing the way brands have to communicate with them?
So I think, in my view, this the generations, millennials and Gen Z, I feel like they're very misunderstood.
Okay.
They're often perceived as frivolous, carefree, and frankly, a little lazy.
Okay.
Because of their dependence on technology. I think the truth is that these two generations have entered the workforce at an all-time employment, you know, height.
Uh-huh.
Where unemployment is, sorry, I meant unemployment.
Yeah.
So, you know, unseen before levels of unemployment.
Right.
Housing is too expensive. And overall, the cost of living is so high versus, you know, what they're paid for, that honestly, it's a big struggle for them. So they're characterized by a few things. One is they place more value on experiences than things or products. Their purchases are much more focused on the value they get, not from the lowest cost point of view, but from what they derive from it.
Right.
And very interestingly, they care very much about a product's origins or how many additives are put into it or whether they're responsibly sourced.
Well said. Well said.
So I think this, sorry.
No, this is very well defined.
So this really puts a kibosh on our marketing efforts, you know, as we have to really go back and re-examine our brand strategies.
Well said.
We have to look at the claims that we do unpack, the brand messaging, even the brand colors to some extent, you know, shiny, bright colors, they're not appreciated anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they give the impression of being too flashy or cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And for food products, nutrition has taken the front seat. So natural colors are being favored in packaging.
Very well said. So Farak, I'm now going to move to the next segment, which are some questions for you personally. All our viewers and listeners love to get to know the guest a little more. So my first question to you is, for someone who's had such an amazing career so far in marketing, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points in your career?
So I'll talk about it from the point of view, brand events for me, you know. I think one of the biggest achievements, you can say, is the launch of a new brand that we did in Unilever. Now, that's completely unheard of, you know, in a global company like Unilever or Nestle, launching a new brand from scratch. It's completely alien. But when I was with the ice cream category, we had the opportunity to launch a kulfi brand. We called it Badami. And we did everything on it, you know, the range architecture, the product architecture, the packaging, the brand key, everything. And then the communication platform and insight platform, etc. And that was such an amazing experience because from, you know, bottom up, we did the whole, you know, we did all of the things that we do, you know, that you see in a marketing textbook, you know. So that was really amazing. And then, of course, because we put our heart and soul into it, we saw the results also, you know. I think we delivered three times what our target was that year.
Fabulous.
That was really amazing.
Fabulous.
The second one was also in the ice cream category. And it was actually a brand failure. We launched a brand called Frutare. It was a regional brand. It had been launched in some other countries already. And it was a fantastic product, I tell you. But I think where we got it wrong was we focused so much on the profitability of the brand that we forgot about the product. We knew from the inside point of view, we knew that's an amazing product. It will do really well with the, you know, with the masses. But then because we were chasing a certain bottom line, we tweaked with the product. We took out, you know, some of the goodies, and then we took it to a price that the consumer could frankly not afford.
Very interesting.
And then it was such a failure. And I think the third one is when I was on the brand Lifebuoy, I got the opportunity to do a massive on ground and online campaign. It was for Global Hand Washing Day. And the background on this is that I had joined Unilever in 2006. And every year I had seen that Lifebuoy would do a great job on, you know, on ground. But every year, Safeguard would, mind my French, kick their asses by doing a small campaign on ground, but then, you know, pasting it on TV as if they had been, you know, down to rural. So I had thought when I came onto the brand in Jan 2012, it was, I said, this is going to be the one year that we're really going to take Global Hand Washing Day really big. And, you know, we really focused on not only the, you know, going into, so what we did was we went into schools and we taught children the importance of hand washing. And I love, there's something that Paul Polman says. He says that we need to do well by doing good. So basically the idea is that a brand cannot have a CSR, you know, incentive or push unless it's tied to the brand's, to the sales of the brand. And that's what we did. We said, that it's important for you to wash your hands five times a day. And we had 89% of the Unilever workforce went into schools. And that for me was so great because there was such a bigger purpose at play.
Correct.
You know, it wasn't just doing it for the sake of doing a big campaign, but it really was at the end of the day, going to grassroots level. And also then, you know, flashing it on media so that everyone can see the value of this.
Very interesting. If Palak, we've now run out of time. So I want to just say thank you so much for sharing such amazing insights, both about branding and about analytics and consumer insights. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh, for having me. It's been really fun talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.